Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for you today, as usual. And Jim, our bad martini on Wednesday was King Abdullah quoting Clint Eastwood lines from Unforgiven about how he's going to get revenge on ISIS for the horrific way they murdered the pilot last month, while President Obama basically sounded like he was the coach of a losing team after a regular season football game. And we also compared it to the president's non-response after the terrorist attack in Paris and not going to the march. Now we even have a stronger contrast. King Abdullah not just content to basically vow to destroy ISIS with every last bullet and every last drop of fuel. He is vowing to actually personally fly sorties over ISIS-controlled territory, Raqqa in particular, and drop munitions in order to help kill ISIS. I don't know if this will be one or two symbolic missions or whether he's actually really going to suit up for the long haul. Either way, Jim, it's pretty hard to send a stronger message to your people that you're committed to this.
I'm actually really struck by this. First of all, if you've seen the picture of him, and this is a relatively recent picture of him, in his flight suit, he looks like a pretty tough SOB, shall we say. The expression on his face, I don't know if this is a picture that was taken after the outrage on the part of ISIS, but he looks like he's a man who means business. And I'm just going to quote our friend Mary Catherine Hamm, who's observing that, look, he's trained as a pilot. Okay, so if he's trained as a pilot, this feels less like a silly Putin-esque staged bravado and more like a Jordanian John Wick after vengeance. Or maybe that's just how I like to imagine it, because it's nice to imagine a leader of a country so righteously enraged by the brutal killing of his citizens and so skilled in the kicking of that tush. I'm cleaning up the language there. That he decides to engage in it personally. And even if it's not the most practical of foreign policies to have each president enter the octagon with these barbarians, I long for a bit of the clarity that animates the impulse. It is such a contrast. This is a part of an American culture that comes up a great deal in our popular culture. And I think you watch this enormous reaction to American Sniper. When we see evil committed, we want to see it confronted. And we want to see it confronted with righteous anger, and I would argue righteous violence. We don't want to sit around and think about how terrible and we're becoming monsters just like them, and you know, why couldn't they have just pinned notes to the hostages and then released them and all that kind of stuff. It's very strange. King Abdullah, through these actions, if he actually comes out and you know, pursues this mission, first of all, you know, I almost envy the Jordanians, you know, having a leader who is willing to take that. We don't know how much risk there is involved in this. There's clearly, it's more than zero. He's doing something to demonstrate to his, you know, it's strange. This is, you know, for all the talk about this being a violent act or something hateful. Look, you know, the brotherhood in arms, that comes from a form of love. This comes from a form of, I will protect my people because they are important to me. And I just feel like it's something a lot of us feel like we've been lacking from our own leadership. And we'll see what happens. But if he does, boy, you know, attaboy King Abdullah. How rare is it do we see an Arab leader who we kind of look on with a great deal of admiration and maybe even a twinge of envy in a circumstance like this.
Yeah, a couple thoughts here. First of all, keep him safe, because if something does happen to him, that's one of the few stable countries left in the Middle East, and would hate for that to devolve into chaos. But hopefully he'll be safe. And secondly, we are not suggesting that President Obama ought to be flying sorties over ISIS-controlled territory. But if he were, he would be the first president since Thomas Whitmore, when the aliens attacked in Independence Day, to take on that role.
Well, people might argue that George W. Bush on the aircraft carrier indicates there are times where a commander-in-chief or a leader of a country putting on a military uniform can look inappropriate in some ways, can look silly in some ways. The leader of a country very rarely assumes the kind of risk that a man or woman in uniform does. And some people might find it inappropriate. If he goes through with this and actually drops something, some ordinance on ISIS, it'd just be something we haven't seen in a very, very long time. Although I guess it's worth noting Prince Harry serving over in Afghanistan with the with British troops. You know, I think there's something to be said for these leaders who are willing to stand with their people in very tough circumstances. So we'll see how this shakes out. But boy, that could be, this could be kind of this shot in the arm for morale that we've kind of needed here in the West.
All right. On to the, I guess we call it the bad martini, but it's also crazy martini number one. But Jim, you probably remember last fall, there was the 10-year anniversary of Brian Williams becoming the new anchor of NBC News. He replaced Tom Brokaw. And the big slogan with this 10-year anniversary was, he's been there, he'll be there. Well, not always, as it turns out. Brian Williams, ever since being embedded with U.S. forces in the early days of the Iraq War, has been telling this story about a harrowing chopper ride in March, early in the days of the Iraq War, when his chopper was forced down. In fact, he's told this story on David Letterman. He's told it many, many times. He even told it last week when he treated the captain of this crew that he was with to a New York Rangers hockey game. And here's how he explained what happened to him just last week.
The story actually started with a terrible moment a dozen years back during the invasion of Iraq, when the helicopter we were traveling in was forced down after being hit by an RPG. Our traveling NBC News team was rescued, surrounded, and kept alive by an armored mechanized platoon from the U.S. Army 3rd Infantry.
Well, not so fast. Apparently, a lot of folks in that unit decided to tell Stars and Stripes that is not what happened. It was a different chopper that was hit. Williams' chopper was fine. And so Williams had this mea culpa, sort of, on Wednesday's NBC Nightly News.
I want to apologize. I said I was traveling in an aircraft that was hit by RPG fire. I was instead in a following aircraft. We all landed after the ground fire incident and spent two harrowing nights in a sandstorm in the Iraq desert. This was a bungled attempt by me to thank one special veteran and, by extension, our brave military men and women, veterans everywhere, those who have served while I did not. I hope they know they have my greatest respect and also now my apology.
Jim, I've never been embedded with a war unit, but if you are a journalist, it's kind of important to get a story like that right. And it's pretty easy to check. And obviously, he got it wrong year after year after year.
Yeah, NBC, I understand that. Now revising the slogan, Brian Williams, he'll remember being there in the past. He'll remember being there in the future. It's fascinating to see the division on whether people think this is a big deal. And put me in the category of folks who thinks, yeah, this is a big deal, because he's been telling the story for a long time. He's, first of all, in that little description he gave on the nightly news last night, we were in a following one. Well, look, he was in a helicopter that followed by an hour. Okay, he makes it sound like, well, they shot at the helicopter in front of us. No, you were nowhere near any of this, according to all the troops who were there. And the fact that the story has been changing version by version, year by year, is very hard to buy into this idea that it's just an innocent mistake. I mentioned this to Mrs. Campaign Spot last night. She's like, why would he do this? And I went and I watched the Letterman appearance where he talks about it. He talks about how Richard Engel is a really, you know, is one of the great war correspondents of this era. And he says, you know, man, are you talking about, you know, getting shot? For me, it's unusual, but for him, it's like Tuesday. Now, I don't know if this is an envy thing, but look, Brian, he also said, look, I'm an anchor. I sit behind a desk in New York City most of the time. So I get the feeling that Brian Williams, you know, having not been much of a war correspondent, doesn't have any great war stories. So he goes out there, he has this experience, and with a little bit of editing, he can have his great war story. He's not a war correspondent, but there was that time I got shot down in that helicopter over Iraq. Except you didn't. It's not just exaggeration. It's not just mixing up details. It's lying, right? We could completely understand forgetting, you know, what was the number of the helicopter or little details or what was he wearing or stuff like that. Brian Fawn had observed that forgetting something like this is kind of like forgetting the details of where you were on 9/11. You know, I mean, if this is genuinely a life and death moment, how do you mix up, oh, I was on the helicopter that wasn't shot at. I thought I was on the one that was. It's really a disingenuous excuse, and it's just kind of fascinating. I mean, some folks obviously are saying Brian Williams has got to go. I think it is pretty problematic for NBC News to have an anchor now associated with this who thinks that with a, you know, brief statement of apology, he can kind of wipe the slate clean. But on the other hand, we live in an era in which, you know, NBC News has had a lot of problems, you know, and this is, you know, he's the guy who hired Chelsea Clinton, you know, MSNBC has Al Sharpton on. This is not the Tom Brokaw, Tim Russert era in NBC News. So the idea that this is going to be considered some sort of major issue and they're going to ditch a $10 million anchor over something like this, I'm rather skeptical of this. Also worth noting, this was on page B14 in the New York Times today.
Oh, man, if he does keep his job, it'll be interesting to see how much property Dan Rather destroys on his way to wherever he works now. On to the second crazy martini. Jim, you spent several lovely days out in Oregon last year, and one of the things you covered while you were out there was the bizarre campaign for governor out there with Democrat John Kitzhaber trying to fend off accusations about his wife's previously secret marriage to some guy back in the 90s so he could stay in the country, i.e. visa and immigration fraud. And it turns out there's a whole lot more corruption involving his wife, or at least allegations of it, using her perch as first lady to advance different causes, including with government resources, which is against the law. And now the Portland Oregonian, which endorsed him, as you report in the campaign spot today, back even after they knew about this sham marriage and so forth, say that all these latest revelations mean he should resign. So welcome to the party, Oregonian.
There are a couple aspects that are kind of maddening about this. The first being that on the one hand, it does mean something when the biggest newspaper in the state calls on the governor to resign over corruption. The Oregonian is by no means a Republican newspaper or a conservative newspaper, and it had some criticism of Kitzhaber in the past, but way back in October, they endorsed this guy for re-election. And the irony is that they actually thought that he was a little too far to the green area. They were concerned about some of his ideas for environmental regulations, which are about as popular as donuts out in Oregon. You know, I mean, you can never get enough of them. Like, you buy a dozen, then you get a couple more environmental regulations just because they know you keep snacking on them. Most of these scandals were starting to come to light at the time of the endorsement. Now, they really started kind of accelerating and more details came out through the month of October. You may recall Oregon is a vote-by-mail state, so there was a lot of folks who wondered how many people had mailed their ballots already and then learned more about these scandals. The short version describing it is his fiancée, Sylvia Hayes, basically was at a consulting business going on, and everybody who wanted to consult with her had business before the state, was trying to influence state laws, state regulations, and state policy. Well, this is corruption. You know, this is, look, we want to change the laws, so we're going to pay a lot of money to the first lady, and hopefully that will influence her husband to change his mind and do things that we want. And if this sounds familiar to our listeners in Virginia, it's because it's not that different from what we saw in the circumstance with Bob McDonnell. Now, Bob McDonnell is trying to avoid spending 2 years in jail on federal corruption charges. Why what's going on with Kitzhaber is significantly different is not clear to me. I'd be very curious about where the U.S. attorney is. I'd be very curious about where anybody who is involved in investigating corruption would be. You know, wait, hello? Anyone home? Is anyone paying attention to this sort of thing? The Oregonian is, to their credit. Having said that, all of this outrage comes after it could do some good, and Kitzhaber can offer a very cynical defense that, look, or most Oregonians knew about this stuff and they voted for me anyway. I remember going out there. It's a beautiful state. There's a lot to like about Oregon, but the Portland voters, you know, give the state this very deep Democratic core that will vote for their guy no matter what, even with corruption. You know, the other thing was that their state exchange had been a disaster, never worked, humiliating, national mockery. And nobody really cared because it was a Democrat and they forgive all that stuff. Well, it seems that the capacity for Democratic voters to forgive corruption and wrongdoing by Democratic lawmakers is near infinite. And it's really just maddening for the rest of us.
Ah, both coasts get a taste of that. Jim, we'll leave it there for today. Talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.